And hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bobick, which means once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with the novel that I've been reading now for about a month and a half, titled The 57 Bus. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled City Mouse, Country Mouse. And then it's Alania and the Great Play, The Stinky Cheese Man, and Other Fairly Stupid Tales, Walter the Farting Dog, and if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with Dr. Dog. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today titled City Mouse, Country Mouse. One summer day, Tansy Mouse was weeding her strawberry patch when she spotted a gray caterpillar. "Got you, Mr. Fuzzy," she said, and pounced. "Aye," squeaked a voice, "my tail." The two little mice gaped at each other. Then they burst out laughing. "Who are you?" said Tansy. "I'm William Gray," said the mouse, "and you scared the pants off me." "I'm sorry," said Tansy. They sat down to talk and eat strawberries. There was so much to talk about. William was a city mouse, and Tansy had never been beyond the next field. He told her about the shops and cafes, the crowded sidewalks, the sounds and smells that filled the air. "It's so exciting," he said. "I can never live anywhere else." In the soft hum of the summer day, Tansy tried to imagine the city. "The country is better," she said. "Come on, I'll show you." And she pulled Will to his feet and led him into her world. Birds sang and bees buzzed, and the air was soft and sweet. Tansy lifted her nose and sniffed. "Just smell the freshness," she said. All day long, the new friends wandered through the leafy green land, talking and laughing. At last, Will looked up. "The sun is getting low," he said. "I'd better be going." "But I'll miss you," said Tansy. "I'll miss you too," said Will. "I miss you already." They looked sadly at each other. Then they shook paws, and he walked away. But Will hadn't gone far before he turned back. "Come with me," he said. "It'll be an adventure." Tansy looked around. The country would still be here when she got back. "Let's go," she said. And they set off towards the city. And now they're in the city. There was so much to see and do in the city. Every day they talked about their dreams and planned their adventures. They were the best of friends. But Tansy was homesick. She missed the song of the cricket and the sweet, grassy scent of the meadow. "Let's go back," she said to Will. "It's so crowded here, and it's too noisy." "I can never leave the city," said Will. "It's exciting. The country is too quiet for me." But Tansy packed her bag and left. Back home in the country, Tansy felt the soft air and heard the sweet sounds she had longed for. But nothing seemed quite as wonderful without Will. Alone in the city, Will missed his friend. The days passed, and the heat of summer gave way to chilly fall. The strawberry leaves shriveled in the frost, and Tansy made jam with the last berries. "Oh, how I wish I could share this with Will," she thought. In the city, Will looked for Tansy in every face. "I'll just go visit for a day," he thought. "The city will still be here when I get back." So early the next morning, he began the long journey back to Tansy. But when he was halfway there, whom did he see? It was Tansy! And she was on her way to visit him, too. "I missed you," they said at the same time, and burst out laughing. The two friends walked arm in arm through the little one-street town and went into a cafe for tea and cake. "I like it here," said Tansy. "I do too," said Well. It's not quite the country and not quite the city."
"It's in between," said Tansy.
"Let's stay here," they both said at once. So Tansy and Will settled into the halfway town. It was just big enough for one grocery shop, one bookstore, and one cafe. It was close enough to the city that they could visit when Will got restless. And it was no farther to the country when Tansy longed for sights and smells of home. They lived right next door to each other, and between their houses, they planted a strawberry patch. They met there every morning to talk about their dreams and plan their adventures. Tansy and Will, the best of friends, lived mousily ever after. Elena and the Great Play. That morning, when I felt myself waking up, I wasn't a bit happy about it. I wanted to sleep some more. "Not yet," I said to myself, and I kept my eyes closed. But then I heard my mom coming up the steps, singing the song she made up about me, "Elena, my Elena, my beautiful Elena," and I knew that sleep time was over. Mom came into the room and kissed my forehead and patted my shoulder. "Time to get up," she said. I said, "No." "Yes," Mom said. When she went out of the room, I pushed my face down deep into the pillow for just a minute before I opened my eyes and sat up. I thought about my mom's words, "time to get up," and they made me laugh. Mom said those same words every morning, and they never sounded funny to me before, but today I laughed and stood up on the bed, and I jumped as high as I could. I'm up," I said, laughing kind of loud. "I'm way up in the air." On my third jump, Mom opened the door, stuck her head in, and gave me a look that meant stop that right now. So I did. Then I remembered what day it was and what was going to happen at school. The second graders play. And even though I'm only in kindergarten, I was going to make a speech at the end. It was only a little speech, 5 little words, but I couldn't wait to say them. I hurried and took my bath, and I hurried and put on my new jeans and t-shirt, and I ate my breakfast and brushed my teeth extra fast. On the way to school, I wanted Mom to walk faster. "We have to hurry up, Mom," I said. "The play." "The play's not until this afternoon," Mom said. "Why don't you practice your speech while we're walking?" "Okay, here's my speech," I said. "Thank you for coming. Goodbye." "That was great, Elena," Mom said. "It was," I said. "Was it really, really, really great? Was it stupendous?" I like to say that word. My dad says that about me all the time. "Absolutely," Mom said. She said Dad couldn't get off from work to see the play, but I could tell him all about it when he got home. When Mom and I got to my classroom door, she waved goodbye to me and to my teacher. "I'll be back to see the play," she said. In our class, Mr. Hill read a story to us and asked us to questions about it. Then we played a game, but I wasn't really listening to any of that. I was listening to my speech going around and around in my head. After lunch, Miss Wheeler came to take me to the room behind the stage. On the way, I said, "Do you want to hear me say my speech?" I didn't wait for her to answer. I said, "Thank you for coming. Goodbye." "Very good, Elena," Miss Wheeler said. In the room, the second grade kids were ready to start the play. They were already dressed like college kids. They had on jeans and t-shirts with big letters on the front, and the girls had on lipstick and long earrings.
They all went out on the stage, carrying books and backpacks, and then Miss Wheeler opened the curtains. I stood right behind the curtains so I could watch the play and the audience, too. But the people in the audience couldn't see me. The kids on the stage started laughing and talking, acting like they were happy college friends. They teased each other and told jokes. The audience was laughing, too, and so was I. But I put my hand over my mouth so nobody could hear me. Then the friends had a big argument. They were all mad at each other, and they were yelling and saying mean things. I wanted them to stop because they looked like they were mad for real, not like when I saw them practice. Then they were sad because they missed each other, and one girl was crying. It made me sad, and I could tell that the audience was sad too, because they got really, really quiet. Then, after a while, the friends stopped being mad, and they were happy again. They were so happy that they had a party. They played music and danced, and they were still dancing while Miss Wheeler closed the curtains really, really slow, and the play was over. I wanted to be at that party. I was as happy as they were, because they liked each other again. The curtains opened again, and the kids bowed, and the audience stood up and clapped and clapped and clapped. Then Miss Wheeler waved me out on the stage to say my speech. But when I opened my mouth, the right words didn't come out. I was too excited to say that little speech. It wasn't good enough for that great play, so I lifted my arms up high and I spread them wide and I said really loud, "Wasn't that great? Wasn't it stupendous? What about those jokes and the yelling and the crying and the dancing?" And I saw Miss Wheeler behind the curtains waving at me to come off the stage, but she didn't look mad. She looked a little bit tickled and a little bit serious at the same time, so I couldn't make myself behave. The audience was clapping again, and I could tell that this time they were clapping for me. And then I got really excited. I didn't know what to do next, so I did a somersault, and another one, and another one. When I stood up, I saw the curtains closing, so I ran to the curtains and stuck my head out, and I said in my loudest voice, "Thank you for coming. Goodbye." After the curtains were closed all the way, Miss Wheeler hugged us all and told us how good we were. When she hugged me, she laughed and shook her head and hugged me again. On the way home, my mom put her arm around my shoulder. I was hoping that other kids on their way home weren't paying any attention to us and thinking that she was treating me like a baby. I wanted Mom to move her arm away, but at the same time, I didn't want her to move it because it made me happy. So many happy things happened that day, starting with my being way up in the air. I was thinking that every day should start just like that. But then I remembered Mom's look, and I told myself that, no, I'd better leave that part out. But the one thing I couldn't leave out was the play, because watching that great play was the best thing of all. The Stinky Cheese Man and Other Fairly Stupid Tales. "I have found a kernel of wheat," said the little hen. "Now, who will help me plant this wheat? Where is that lazy dog? Where is that lazy cat? Where is that lazy mouse? Wait a minute, hold everything. You can't tell your story right here. This is the end paper. The book hasn't even started yet. Who are you? Will you help me plant the wheat? I'm Jack, the narrator. And no, I can't help you plant the wheat. I'm a very busy guy trying to put a book together. Now, why don't you just disappear for a few pages? I'll call when I need you. But who will help me tell my story? Who will help me draw a picture of the wheat? Who will help me spell the wheat? Listen, hen, forget the wheat. Here comes the title page. Title page for the Stinky Cheese Man and other fairly stupid tales. This book is dedicated to our close, personal, special friend. Your name here. I know. The page is upside down. I meant to do that. Whoever looks at that dedication stuff anyhow. If you really want to read it, you can always stand on your head. Introduction. A long time ago, people used to tell magical stories of wonder and enchantment. Those stories were called fairy tales. Those stories are not in this book. The stories in this book are almost fairy tales, but not quite. The stories in this book are fairly stupid tales. I mean, what else would you call a story like Goldilocks and the Three Elephants? This girl walking through the woods smells peanut porridge cooking. She decides to break into the elephant's house, eat the porridge, sit in the chairs, and sleep in the beds. But when she gets in the house, she can't climb up on baby elephant's chair because it's too big. She can't climb up on mama elephant's chair because it's much too big. And she can't climb up on papa elephant's chair because it's much, much too big. So she goes home, the end. And if you don't think that's fairly stupid, you should read Little Red Running Shorts, or maybe The Stinky Cheese Man. In fact, you should definitely go read the stories now, because the rest of this introduction just kind of goes on and doesn't really say anything. I stuck it on to the end here so it would fill up the page and make it look like I really knew what I was talking about. So stop now. I mean it. Quit reading. Turn the page. If you read this last sentence, it won't tell you anything. Jack, Up the Hill, Fairy Tale Forest, 1992. Surgeon General's Warning. It has been determined that these tales are fairly stupid and probably dangerous to your health. Chicken Little. Once upon a time, Chicken Little was standing around when a piece of something fell on her head. She wasn't the brightest thing on two legs, so she started running around in circles, clucking, "The sky is falling! The sky is falling! We must tell the president!" Chicken Licken ran to her friend, Ducky Lucky, and clucked, "Ducky Lucky! Ducky Lucky! The sky is falling! The sky is falling! We must tell the president!" "Let's go!" quacked Ducky Lucky. Chicken Licken, Ducky Lucky ran to their friend, Goosey Lucy, and yelled, "Goosey Lucy! Goosey Lucy! The sky is falling! The sky is falling! We must tell the president!" "Let's go!" honked Goosey Lucy. Chicken Licken, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy ran to their friend, Cocky Locky, and yelled, "Cocky Locky! Cocky Locky! The sky is falling! The sky is falling! We must tell the president!" "Let's go!" crowed Cocky Locky. "Wait a minute! Wait a minute!" cried Jack the narrator. "I forgot the table of contents! I forgot the table of contents!" "Hey, you're not in this story," said Chicken Licken. "I know," said Jack the narrator, "but I came to warn you. The table of contents is..." "The sky is falling! The sky is falling!" clucked Chicken Licken. "We must tell the president." So Chicken Licken, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy, Cocky Locky ignored Jack the narrator and ran off to catch a plane to Washington. Just outside the airport, they met Foxy Loxy. "Foxy Loxy! Foxy Loxy! The sky is falling! The sky is falling! We must tell the president!" yelled Chicken Licken, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy, and Cocky Locky. "Well, come with me," said Foxy Loxy. "I know a shortcut to the airport." Foxy Loxy led Chicken Licken, Ducky Lucky, Goosey Lucy, and Cocky Locky to his cave. He didn't get to eat them, though, because Chicken Licken was almost right. The sky wasn't falling. The table of contents was. It fell and squashed everybody. The end. The Princess and the Bowling Ball. Once upon a time, there was a prince, and this prince's dad and mom, the king and queen, somehow got it into their royal heads that no princess would be good enough for their boy unless she could feel a pea through 100 mattresses. So it should come as no surprise that the prince had a very hard time finding a princess. Every time he met a nice girl, his mom and dad would pile 100 mattresses on top of a pea and then invite her to sleep over. When the princess came down for breakfast, the queen would ask, "How did you sleep, dear?" The princess would politely say, "Fine, thank you," and the king would show her the door. Now this went on for 3 years, and of course, nobody ever felt the pea under 100 mattresses. Then one day, the prince met the girl of his dreams. He decided he better do something about it. That night, before the princess went to bed, the prince slipped his bowling ball under the 100 mattresses. When the princess came down for breakfast that morning, the queen asked, "How did you sleep, dear?" "Well, this might sound odd," said the princess, "but I think you need another mattress. I felt like I was sleeping on a lump as big as a bowling ball." The king and queen were satisfied. The prince and princess were married, and everyone lived happily, though maybe not completely honestly, ever after. The end. The Really Ugly Duckling. Once upon a time, there was a mother duck and a father duck who had 7 baby ducklings. 6 of them were regular-looking ducklings. The 7th was a really ugly duckling. Everyone used to say, "What a nice-looking bunch of ducklings." All except that one. Boy, he's really ugly. The really ugly duckling heard these people, but he didn't care. He knew that one day he would probably grow up to be a swan and be bigger and look better than anything in the pond. Well, as it turned out, he was just a really ugly duckling, and he grew up to be just a really ugly duck. The end. The Other Frog Prince. Once upon a time, there was a frog. One day, when he was sitting on his lily pad, he saw a beautiful princess sitting by the pond. He hopped in the water, swam over to her, and poked his head out of the weeds. "Pardon me, O beautiful princess," he said in his most sad and pathetic voice. "Oh, I wonder if you could help me." The princess was about to jump up and run, but she felt sorry for the frog with the sad and pathetic voice. So she asked, "What can I do to help you, little frog?" "Oh, well," said the frog, "I'm not really a frog, but a handsome prince who was turned into a frog by a wicked witch's spell. And the spell can only be broken by the kiss of a beautiful princess." Well, the princess thought about this for a second, then lifted the frog from the pond and kissed him. "I was just kidding," said the frog. He jumped back into the pond, and the princess wiped the frog slime off her lips. The end. Little Running Shorts. "Okay, I've got things running smoothly now," said Jack the narrator. "And this next story is even better than the last three. See, it's about this girl who runs very fast and always wears red running shorts. That's where her name comes from, get it? So anyway, this girl is running to her granny's house when she meets a wolf. He tricks her into taking the long way while he takes the shortcut. Now this is the good part, because Red runs so fast that she beats the wolf to Granny's house. He knocks on the door, Red answers it, and guess what she says? "My, what slow feet you have." And that's it, the end. Is that great or what? So sit back, relax, and enjoy Little Red Running Shorts. And now, like I already said, Little Red Running Shorts. "Well, you just told the whole story," says Little Red Running Shorts. "We're not going to tell it again." "You can't say that," says Jack. "You have to start with Once Upon a Time." "No way," says the wolf. "You blew it." "But you guys are next. Look at the title at the top of the page. Little Red Running Shorts. That's you." "Let's go, wolf. We're out of here. Wait, You can't do this. Your story is supposed to be 3 pages long. What do I do when we turn the page? I planted the wheat. I watered the wheat. I harvested the wheat. Now do I get to tell my story? Said little Red Hen. Say, what's going on here? Why is that page blank? Is that my page? Where's that lazy dog? Where's that lazy cat? Where's that lazy mouse? How do they expect me to tell the whole story by myself? Where's that lazy narrator? Where's that lazy illustrator? Where is that lazy author? Jack's Bean Problem. Forget that hen. Now it's time for the best story in the whole book. My story. Because once upon a time, I traded our last cow for 3 magic beans and, hey, giant, what are you doing down here? You're wrecking my whole story. I don't like that story, said the giant. You always trick me. That's the best part, said Jack. Fee-fi-fo, fee-fi-fum-fory, I have made my own story. Great rhyme, giant, and I'm sure your story is just as good. But there's no room for it, so why don't you climb back up the beanstalk? I'll be up in a few minutes to steal your gold and your singing harp. I'll grind your bones to make my bread. Oh, I knew you'd understand. And there's another little thing that's been bugging me. Could you please stop talking in uppercase letters? It really messes up the page. I will read my story now, said the giant. And he did. Giant story. The end of the evil stepmother. Said, I'll huff and snuff and give you 3 wishes. The beast changed into 7 dwarfs, happily ever after, for a spell had been cast by a wicked witch. Once upon a time. That's your story, said Jack. You've got to be kidding. That's not a fairly stupid tale. That's an incredibly stupid tale. That's an unbelievably stupid tale. That is the most stupid tale I ever... Owk! The giant grabbed Jack and dragged him to the next page. Jack's story. Once upon a time, there was a giant. The giant squeezed Jack and said, Tell me a better story, or I will grind your bones to make my bread. And when your story is finished, I will grind your bones to make my bread anyway. Ho, ho, ho. Well, the giant laughed an ugly laugh. Jack thought, He'll kill me if I do. He'll kill me if I don't. There's only one way to get out of this. Jack cleared his throat and then began his story. Once upon a time, there was a giant. The giant squeezed Jack and said, Tell me a better story, or I will grind your bones to make my bread. And when your story is finished, I will grind your bones to make my bread anyways. Ho, ho, ho. Cinder Rumpelstiltskin. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful girl named Cinderella who lived with her wicked stepmother and 2 ugly stepsisters. These step-relatives were not only wicked and ugly, they also made Cinderella clean the house every day. One day, the local prince announced that he was holding a fabulous ball at his castle. Everyone was invited. The stepmother and stepsisters got all dressed up to go, but, as usual, they made Cinderella clean the house, so she didn't have time to get ready. After the stepmother and stepsisters left for the ball, Cinderella sat down and began to cry. Just then, a little man appeared. Please don't cry, he said. I can help you spin straw into gold. I don't think that will do me much good, said Cinderella. I need a fancy dress, glass slippers, and a coach. Well, would you like to try to guess my name? Said the clever little man. Cinderella looked at him. No, not really. Come on. Do you think it's Chester? Well, if you don't have a dress, it doesn't really matter. Oh, just guess a name, any name. I'm not supposed to talk to strangers," said Cinderella. Then she closed the door and left the little man standing outside screaming, "Rumpelstiltskin! Rumpelstiltskin! Rumpelstiltskin!" When the stepmother and stepsisters got home from the ball, Cinderella told them about the strange little man. They still made her clean the house. And meaner still, they changed her name to Cinder Rumpelstiltskin. The end. The Tortoise and the Hare, H-A-I-R. Once upon a time, there was a tortoise who was very slow but very dependable. He would always get where he set out to go. It just took him longer than most people. One day, Rabbit saw Tortoise walking slowly but surely down the road and said, "Tortoise, you are so slow. I could probably grow hair faster than you run."
"Oh, yeah?" said Tortoise slowly.
"Yeah," said Rabbit. So they decided to race. On the day of the big race, Tortoise and Rabbit lined up at the starting line. Owl said, "On your mark, get set, grow." Tortoise started to run. Rabbit started to grow his hair. Tortoise ran, Rabbit grew 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 his hair. Tortoise is still running. Rabbit is still growing his hair. Not the end. The Stinky Cheese Man. Once upon a time, there was a little old woman and a little old man who lived together in a little old house. They were lonely, so the little old lady decided to make a man out of stinky cheese. She gave him a piece of bacon for a mouth and two olives for eyes and put him in the oven to cook. When she opened the oven to see if he was done, the smell knocked her back. "Phew! What's that terrible smell?" she cried. The stinky cheese man hopped out of the oven and ran out the door calling, "Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the stinky cheese man." The little old lady and the little old man sniffed the air. "I'm not really very hungry," said the little old man. "I'm not really all that lonely," said the little old lady. So they didn't chase the stinky cheese man. The stinky cheese man ran and ran until he met a cow eating grass in a field. "Wow, what's that awful smell?" said the cow. The stinky cheese man said, "I've run away from the little old lady and the little old man, and I can run away from you too. I can. Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the stinky cheese man." Well, the cow gave another sniff and said, "Well, I'll bet you could give someone two or three stomach aches. I think I'll just eat weeds." So the cow didn't chase the stinky cheese man either. The stinky cheese man ran and ran until he met some kids playing outside school. "Gross," said a little girl. "What's that nasty smell?" "I've run away from a little old lady and a little old man and a cow. And I can run away from you too, I can. Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the stinky cheese man." A little boy looked up, sniffed the air, and said, "If we catch him, our teacher will probably make us eat him. Let's get out of here." So the kids didn't chase the stinky cheese man either. By and by, the stinky cheese man came to a river with no bridge. "How will I ever cross this river? It's too big to jump. And if I try to swim across, I'll probably fall apart," said, well, you know who. Just then, the sly fox, who shows up in a lot of stories like these, poked his head out of the bushes. "Why, just hop on my back and I'll carry you across, stinky cheese man. How do I know you won't eat me?" "Trust me," said the fox. So the stinky cheese man hopped on the fox's back. The fox swam to the middle of the river and said, "Aw, man, what is that funky smell?" The fox coughed, gagged, and sneezed, and the Stinky Cheese Man flew off his back and into the river, where he fell apart. The end.
Shh, be very quiet. I move the end paper up here so the giant would think the book is over. The big lug is finally asleep. Now I can sneak out of here. Just turn the page very quietly, and that will be the...
I found the wheat. I planted the wheat. I grew the wheat. I harvested the wheat. I ground the wheat. I made the dough. I baked the bread, said the little red hen. And did anyone help me? Did anyone save space for my story? So now, said the little red hen, who thinks they're going to help me eat the bread?
Bread? Said the giant. Eat, eat, said the giant.
The end. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for a month and a half, titled The 57 Bus, a true story of two teenagers and the crime that changed their lives. One teenager in a skirt, one teenager with a lighter. One moment that changes both of their lives forever. If it weren't for the 57 bus, Sasha and Richard never would have met. Both were high school students in Oakland, California, one of the most diverse cities in the country. But they inhabited different worlds. Sasha lived in the middle-class foothills and attended a small private school. Richard lived in economically challenged flatlands and attended a large public one. After school each day, their paths overlapped on the bus for a mere 8 minutes. But one afternoon, a single reckless act left Sasha severely burned and Richard charged with 2 hate crimes and facing life imprisonment. The case garnered international attention, thrusting both teenagers into the spotlight. But in the 57 bus, author Dashika Slater shows that what might at first seem like a simple matter of right or wrong, justice and injustice, victim and criminal, is something more complicated and far more heartbreaking. This true story, first chronicled in the New York Times Magazine by Slater and artfully, compassionately, and expertly expanded upon here, is a riveting exploration of race, class, gender, identity, morality, and forgiveness, told with honesty and insight gleaned from both teens' lives. The 57 Bus will inspire you to rethink all you know about crime, punishment, and empathy. Okay, last week we learned that Richard's mom was 15 when she had him, and his dad ended up in prison. Richard's life changed when he was 9, and 2 cousins were forced to live with him because his aunt was shot and killed his stepdad, and mom had a boy. Now their family was 6 people. Richard was always doing stuff for attention. One day, Richard and his 5 friends got into a fight, and they were arrested and all sent to detention. They never saw each other again. His friend Skeet ran away from the detention center, got shot, and died. And that's where I left off last week. If. Everything turned dark then. Skeet dead. Skeet dead. Skeet dead. That killed Richard, Cherie said later. It killed all of us. She didn't have an explanation for his murder except the usual. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong company. Skeet was 2 years older than she and Richard were. After he ran away from his Southern California group home, he took up with other more dangerous friends. I kept thinking, Cherie says, if we never got into that fight, maybe Skeet would still be alive. It was an open casket funeral. Cherie says she almost passed out when she saw Skeet lying dead in his coffin. People had to hold her up. But at least she wasn't alone. Richard, in a group home 3.5 hours away, had no one beside him to keep him from falling. No one who knew Skeet. No one who understood. murder. In 2012, Oakland was the most dangerous city in California. According to Oakland Police Department statistics, there were nearly 2,800 assaults and more than 4,100 robberies. In all, 131 people were killed. 8 of them were under 18. Lamont Price, killed February 16, 2012, age 17, shot. Charles Hill III, killed March 23, 2012, age 16, shot. Shante Daniels Jr., killed April 21, 2012, age 15, shot. Handari Askari, killed July 10, 2012, age 15, shot. Tallaton Turner, killed August 8, 2012, age 16, shot. Robbie Sarditon, killed November 25, 2012, age 16, shot. Raquel Gerstel, killed November 25, 2012, age 15, shot. Jabril Jordan, killed December 30, 2012, age 15, shot. Richard and Cherie didn't know the Hadari who was killed, but they were friends with Charles Hill. He was killed at a party out by 68th Avenue. Cherie was there the night it happened, but she'd gotten spooked by all the guns at the party and left. She could feel death in the air. She walked down to the corner and called Day in tears. "Come get me," she pleaded. "Somebody's about to die." By the time Day arrived, Charles was dead. Skeet was the first murder of 2013. There would be another 91 people killed before the year was out. 7 of the people who were shot were younger than 18, including an 8-year-old girl and a 16-month-old boy. "Every year we lose somebody," Cherie says. "It's just like, who's next? I'm scared for myself because bullets don't have no names on them. That's why I don't go outside. There's too much going on." Richard had lost 2 aunts to murder, his mother's sister, Savannah, and his father's sister, Tish, who was killed by her boyfriend in 2008. Now he had lost 2 of his friends. Violence was like the fog that swept in from San Francisco Bay on summer afternoons to cloak the city in damp shadow. Even in the bright sunshine, you knew it could roll in at any minute and chill you to the bone. Working. Richard returned to Oakland the following summer, having spent all sophomore year in wet Redding. Jasmine was delighted to have him home. She had visited him regularly while he was away and talked with him on the phone. But it had been hard for both of them. Now it was time for a fresh start. Richard signed up for a job training program conducted by the Unity Council, an Oakland nonprofit, which led to an internship. The workshop facilitator, Josh Guzman, noticed that Richard stood out from the other young participants. He was smart and focused and a quick study, and he seemed to be enjoying himself. Richard loved having a job. He was conscientious about arriving promptly, and he took care with his work, doing things right the first time, and stepping in to fix mistakes made by other interns. Once, Guzman asked Richard to help him with a project another intern hadn't completed. Organizing some notes Guzman had jotted down on a notepad about the summer workshop and turning them into an organized lesson plan. Richard took the scattered, out-of-order notes, typed them, and arranged them into easy-to-follow lessons. Guzman was impressed. "Richard really did amazing work during his internship," he wrote in a letter. "I am confident when I say that he has the potential to achieve anything that he wants." Jasmine noticed how much more grown up Richard seemed now that he was working. he offered to help out with the bills instead of spending his earnings on himself. He liked being a man with a paycheck. Stripped. It was the end of October, 2 months into Richard's junior year. He and his cousin Gerald were on their way over to Cherie's house to kick it with her brother, and they stopped in at a liquor store to get something to drink. That's when Richard ran into a boy he knew from around the way. A few minutes later, two guns to his head. Gerald was walking in front, so he didn't see what happened. But suddenly, Richard wasn't wearing his pink Nike foam posits anymore. Richard's face was crimson, the way it always got when he was furious. In Oakland, it's called getting stripped. The kid took his wallet, money, phone, shoes, coat. Gerald wanted to go back, find the kids who did it, but Richard told him to keep walking. He had been caught without his people. That's all there was to say, but at least he hadn't been killed. Rumor was that the boy who robbed him had killed people. Trust issues. Who in this world can you trust? When the guns are drawn, when the sun goes down, when you're walking in the shadows, who can you trust? People call themselves your friend. They say they were there, but they weren't there. Say they're coming, but they don't show. Say they got your back as they get their knives out, two tongues in their mouths, the one they use to promise and the one they use to lie. I don't have any friends, Richard once said. I have associates. After he was robbed, Richard didn't come to school for a few days. When he returned, he sat in Caprice's office and told her what had happened. He seemed pensive and a little shaken. The whole time, the guns were pointed at him, he said. He had stayed calm, observing, trying to figure out how not to have the situation escalate, how not to die. Then Richard gave Caprice his mother's phone number. The type of character you have and the type of character my mama has, you could almost be friends, he said. Caprice laughed. Richard, you know, if I become friends with your mom and I'm working here at school, that means she's going to know every single thing that you're doing because I'm going to tell her. I want you to do that, Richard said, because I already have a bad rap. And I want her to know that I'm really trying to do everything I can to not be like that. I'm a graduate, and I'm make her happy. Part 3, The Fire. Monday, November the 4th, 2013. A week or so after Richard was robbed, Jasmine came into his room to talk to him as he got ready for school. She was concerned about his schoolwork. He complained sometimes that his classes didn't make sense. Now she told him he needed to talk to his teachers. You have to ask for help, she said. That afternoon, Richard's cousin, Lloyd, came by Oakland High looking for him. A heavy, bespectacled kid with a gap between his front teeth. Lloyd was goofy and boisterous, qualities that made him unpopular with the school's security staff. He was 2 years older than Richard, but he didn't act it. Just a big old baby, campus security officer Carlita Collins says, a big rambunctious ball of energy. I always make Lloyd leave whenever I see him here. Richard and Lloyd were always together. Lloyd spent a lot of time at Richard's house because his mother was often out of town. Richard looked up to him. He would always be with him. Lloyd's brother, Gerald, remembers. It was just Lloyd and Richard. He was always following behind Lloyd. That afternoon, Lloyd wanted Richard to leave school early, but Richard wouldn't do it. So Lloyd hung around outside the gates until Richard was out of school. Bye, Auntie, Richard said to Collins as he left. He opened his arms and gave her a hug. He's a beautiful young man, Collins said later. I'm telling you, I didn't feel nothing but love when he hugged me. The 57 bus. Sasha's bus ride to and from Maybach High School took an hour and involved as many as two transfers, but Sasha didn't mind. They had always loved the bus, loved the intersecting lines of transit routes on the map, the crisp procession of times on the schedule. In their spare time, they drew maps of new bus, subway, and streetcar lines, or read up on historical public transit systems. Sasha loves buses in a way I can't even understand, explains Healy. I don't even like buses. They love buses. They like reading things about buses. You can offer them a ride home, and they're like, I'll take the bus. Most days after school, Sasha and their best friend, Michael, walked together from Maybach to the BART station on College Avenue, about a mile away. Along the way, they'd pass a manhole cover on which someone had spray-painted, Do Not Eat This. Usually, one of them would point out the intersection to the other. Hey, don't eat that! Most of the time, they split up when they got to the BART station. Michael would take the BART train, and Sasha would take the bus. Sometimes, when they arrived at the station, the train would already be there. Dude, I got this, Michael always said, a joke in reference to the impossibility of sprinting upstairs to the platform in time to catch the train. It didn't really make sense. It just seemed funny. They weren't really dude-type people. After that, Sasha would walk across the street to pick up the first of the two buses that would take them home. The 57 was the second. In the afternoon, it was usually packed with students from a dozen different elementary, middle, and high schools. On game days, the kids from rival high schools razzed each other back and forth. It was loud, obnoxious, rowdy. The kids were tired, wired, just sprung from school. The adults looked out the window or studied their phones, tried not to make eye contact. The bus felt charged with daredevil energy, hot, muggy, and musky, with adolescent bodies. Well, the first question you faced when getting on was where to sit. Up front, close to the driver, it felt safer there. If the chaos made you nervous, that's where girls tended to sit. In the back, out of sight, more room to spread out. You might even get a seat to yourself. Sasha liked the back of the bus, a platform seat they could spread out on, tuck their legs under. There, they could read, do homework, nap. They had trained themselves to wake as the bus rounded the sharp S-curve just before their stop. On November the 4th, they were unusually tired, having stayed up late the night before writing a paper for Russian Lit. Less than 24 hours earlier, they'd shared their exhaustion on Tumblr. Do you ever get really tired when you have a lot of shit to do and you just start crying for no reason? Now, as the 57 bus rattled up MacArthur Boulevard, Sasha's eyes drifted closed. 4:52 p.m. Every AC transit bus is equipped with cameras that continuously record sound and video from multiple vantage points. The 57 bus was no exception. The cameras recorded Lloyd and Richard climbing on at the front a little before 5 p.m. and walking down the aisle toward the back. Lloyd, chubby, in a zipped-up black hoodie. Richard, lean, in a black hoodie over a white T-shirt and an orange-billed New York's Knick hat. The bus was a double-length one, two buses fused together like co-enjoined twins by an accordion-pleated rubber seam. Most of the seats were taken. An older woman who wanted to talk to the bus driver about her route. A mom holding the hand of a little girl in a pink hoodie. A gaggle of laughing teenage boys. How's everything? The driver asked a middle-aged man as he slid his bus pass into the machine. Long day, the man replied, shaking his head. Richard recognized a boy named Jamal sitting at the back of the bus and greeted him with a dap. "Molly B," Lloyd shouted, following suit. "What's up, dude?" Jamal was tall and lanky. He wore jeans and a white hoodie with a thick, horizontal black stripe across the shoulders. His voice was low and thick, faded. As the bus started up again, the two cousins gripped the silver pole in front of Jamal. Behind them, Sasha slept. A paperback copy of Anna Karenina lay closed in their lap. Their skirt, gauzy and white, dangled over the edge of the seat. It couldn't have been easy to sleep with Lloyd nearby. He bounced up and down, trying to make the bus shake, rapped a snippet of the song, Started from the Bottom by Drake, screeched random words like chinchilla and obituary. He shouted down the aisle to a girl he'd noticed when they climbed on board. "Hey, girl, excuse me." A girl in blue basketball shorts turned to look at him. "No, your friend, the light-skinned one." Jamal pointed at Sasha, whispered, "Look at this, dude." Lloyd turned and looked over his shoulder. He cackled. On the video, you can hear what Jamal says as he hands Richard the lighter. But you can see him take out his iPhone and point it toward Sasha as if planning to record. Later, Richard would say that it was supposed to be funny, like that prank show on MTV with Ashton Kutcher, punked. He thought the fabric would smolder for a minute, and then Sasha would wake up and slap it out, startled. "I need a good laugh," he had said just after getting on the bus. Now he showed the lighter to Lloyd and then swung to the opposite side of the silver pole, closer to Sasha. He flicked the lighter by the hem of Sasha's skirt. Nothing happened. Lloyd was still shouting up to the front of the bus. "Hey, light-skinned girl! Light-skinned girl!" Jamal kept repeating what Lloyd said, his deep voice like an echo from the bottom of a well. Lloyd bounced up the aisle to where the girls were sitting, perching on the edge of a nearby seat. And unfortunately, this is all the time that we have for today. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. And I want to say hi to all the listeners and encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the fascinating book titled The 57 Bus. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.